Well, we're going to focus for the next 20 minutes or so on the future of healthcare and talk with a group, Colorado Citizens for Healthcare. I have three members of the group joining me now in our studio. We have Dr. Richard D'Ilio, we have Mike Homner, and we have Linda Peterson. And I'd like to welcome all of you into the studio. Thank you all for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, as I said, Dr. D'Ilio, Richard, you were an ER doctor for almost three decades, and you also spent a long time working in rural Colorado in Sterling. You've seen many sides of the healthcare issue. So first of all, this 12-member group that you are part of, Colorado Citizens for Healthcare, how did it all get started? And we'll talk a little bit about your own concerns about healthcare.
Right after the inauguration, MoveOn.org had a general meeting in Boulder, of which there are about 200 people. We broke into smaller groups, and probably about 20 of our members initially formed, with the thrust of the working on the ACA, how to preserve that, how to make it known to people the positive aspects of that, and how to work with the Congress in making sure they did preserve that as well.
Time is of the essence, though, right now, because as we have been reporting, Republicans right now are negotiating some type of deal in the U.S. Senate, some type of deal because we don't know exactly what that is. It's all being done without any input from Democrats and really largely done in secret. Linda Peterson, you're a member of the group. Now, you've also been practicing as a licensed psychologist for almost four decades. And so you also have direct experience professionally with the healthcare system needing, you know, seeing how vital it is to provide mental health support. Talk about the urgency of why now, why you're really coming together as a group around the ACA and what's happening with healthcare right now in the Senate.
Well, one of the things that has been happening with the bills being considered by Congress is they're not giving priority to mental health or drug abuse treatment. And these are crucial, especially right now when there is an epidemic of addiction to painkillers. Eliminating services for drug abuse treatment would be very harmful to a lot of states where the drug abuse rate is very high.
And as I said, you've worked for almost four decades now as a, right, in this particular arena. You've seen firsthand what it means to people who need that help to have access to that help, but also if you don't have access to that help, the consequences of that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike Homner, you're also part of Colorado Citizens for Healthcare, and many of our listeners will be familiar with you as your work as a homelessness rights advocate. So you've also seen personally what it means to be living really on the margins of society without a lot of resources. And so why are you now personally concerned about the future of healthcare?
Well, with the expansion of Medicaid, we saw a lot of people that were either homeless or in poverty be able to get ahead and pick up and have insurance. And as Richard knows, if you don't have insurance, the emergency room is your general practitioner. And it costs an enormous amount of money to get ahead and have health care that way. With Medicaid, you can have your regular doctor, have your regular visits, and they're much cheaper. So it saves society money. There's also, you know, on the Medicaid side, there's seniors that are maybe in nursing homes, people with disabilities, or people that are homeless that have insurance that we see or we think is going to be taken away from us. And in fold, it is going to cost society much more money than what we, you know, we're currently doing. So we are fighting to stop that, the deletion or the cutting of funds to Medicaid.
Dr. Richard D'Ilio, as I said, you spent nearly three decades working in ER. Talk about that reality where so many people, as Mike said, either homeless people or people who just don't have access to healthcare or who did not have access to health insurance prior to the ACA and prior to the expansion of Medicaid, what that means for a hospital and for you as a healthcare provider and the patient when the ER doc becomes the primary healthcare provider.
Well, what I saw, particularly at Sterling, such a small 30-bed hospital and servicing a huge, huge area geographically, including people coming in from Nebraska for health care, that we were the last stopping point for them. Many of them did not have primary care doctors. The lack of health because of that, they relied on us to be their primary care doctors in a stopgap measure. So it was kind of sad to see that, how unhealthy they were, and that we were the last resort. They knew that we couldn't turn them away, which is, I think, only fair, but it also meant not continuity of care. They would see us once and then maybe go see a doctor, maybe not, maybe be able to get into a doctor. A lot of times not, because they didn't have any insurance. So they're left hanging to just use us in a stopgap measure, which is highly unhealthy.
And did the Affordable Care Act impact that in any way?
It did, almost too successfully. And we saw people then realizing they could get health care. One, they could come into the emergency department without walking out with a $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 bill. They realized they could get more emergent care. And then as a result, we were able to then get them into primary care doctors, because then they did have some degree of insurance coverage.
Well, cuts or any kind of change to the current Medicaid program is certainly one of the major issues that has been identified, people who are concerned about what could happen with healthcare. Some of the voices that we heard from Longmont, a lot of people were saying, we know the Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act was not perfect, but we're really concerned about what's ahead. What are your areas of greatest concerns, and what were your thoughts overall on maybe some of the failings and some of the areas that needed improvement of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, when the AHCA came out, I think that really got everyone focused on what could happen in a very negative fashion.
And that was the Republican proposed
correct
measure.
I mean, there were probably five areas that we really were concerned with. First, the increased cost to the elderly. I'm looking some of them from $1,000 a year to like $13,000 a year for coverage. Second thing was the biggest thing was the Medicaid cuts, meaning potential loss of multi-millions for insurance. The block grant idea from the Republicans is kind of shifting the burdens to the states, and the states just don't have that kind of financial resources. So the only thing that's going to happen is that people are going to lose their insurance. I think the other big thing we're concerned about was shifting this Medicare cut to the wealthy with some substantial tax breaks of multi millions, maybe close to $1 billion total, things to like the pharmaceutical corporations and healthcare companies, as well as the wealthy. So this is totally unfair to really shift the burden like this. We're also concerned about the effects on the essential benefits. One of the greatest things with Obamacare was producing 10 essential benefits to produce a level playing field that all insurance should have this, and everyone should have this kind of coverage. Before, the insurance companies could pick and choose what they were going to do for these benefits or not. So that's probably one of our greatest concerns. And then, of course, the pre-existing condition requirement that may really be lost in this proposal, or at least make it so hard for people to afford insurance who have pre-existing conditions.
That's Dr. Richard DiIllo, who spent almost three decades working as an ER doc in multiple hospitals in Colorado, including one in Sterling, Colorado, in a rural hospital there. He's one of 12 members of a group, Colorado Citizens for Healthcare, that formed in the wake of everything that's happening politically around healthcare, particularly the repeal or attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act and the introduction of a Republican plan. Dr. DiIllo is one of my guests this morning, along with Linda Peterson and Mike Homner, also members of Colorado Citizens for Healthcare. As I said, a lot of what's happening now with Senate Republicans is happening in secret. And so there seems to be a lot of concern about what's happening that we don't even know about. Can anyone clarify what we actually do know about what Republicans are talking about now in the Senate?
Well, I think one thing, we can look at how the House bill came about, and you kind of get a sense for what the Republican mindset is going to be in the Senate. And particularly now we're hearing that there may be up to 80% of the House AHCA bill is going to be preserved, which means only a 20% kind of tweaking. But I think we're going to definitely see that there's going to be this cost shifting to states and individuals, there's going to be a substantial reduction in Medicare, or I'm sorry, Medicaid, which is going to clearly mean multi-millions are going to lose their insurance. The tax breaks still seems to be an important Republican mindset. That's probably going to occur. And then we're going to potentially see pre-existing conditions be affected. And there's a thing that people probably don't realize is that employer-based insurances may also change. The cost may go up. The options may go down. So people who have insurance through their employers are going to be affected as well, even though they think they may not be. I think Linda certainly can tell her effect on the having a pre-existing condition, what it meant to her life and her finances.
Right. When I was 37 years old, I got cancer. It was a very curable kind of cancer, required only surgery, no other treatment. Yet after that, I was unable to get any insurance other than extremely expensive insurance because of this pre-existing condition. One thing that happened as a result of Obamacare or the ACA was that premiums for people under these circumstances went way down. So at that point, I didn't have to pay as much as I had been. Because of my pre-existing condition, I was actually paying about 40% of my gross income for insurance. And after Obamacare, it went way down to like $1,000 a year.
So that's your own personal experience, Linda. But also, as I said, you also have almost four decades working as a licensed psychologist. And so you know about the need to provide mental health services as well. There's a lot of concern that certain pre-existing conditions will also stop people getting health care under a new plan. And a lot of people who've maybe suffered from trauma or suffered from some type of mental health episode. Can you talk a little bit about concerns about that?
Right. If the Senate does not include coverage for pre-existing conditions, especially in the mental health area, then it will be a very great hardship for people. There are a lot of people who do experience trauma and other conditions that would prevent them from receiving the treatment that they need if pre-existing conditions are not covered.
Mike Comner, your own personal experience as someone who's formerly homeless, now you've talked about a lot of people then rely on the emergency room for that primary care, but it's really critical care and kind of disease management at that point. What was your personal experience with the Affordable Care Act? And maybe talk a little bit about prior to that, how you were able to or maybe not able to access health care.
Well, yeah, I didn't have a chance to have health care when I was on the street. And so, as I said, I went into the hospital one time. And when they realized I didn't have insurance, I had a very serious, emergency, they basically said, here's some medication, thank you and goodbye, here's a referral. I can tell you from my own experience what's happened since Medicaid has been introduced, and I do receive it because I have a disability. I can tell you, well, about 3 months ago, I went in and asked my pharmacy to give me the retail price of the medications that I take every month. And it added up to $2,594.10. Now, if they do away with that, even a quarter of that I couldn't pay. So, I'm staring at an issue that my medicine may not, or my meds may not be covered. And even if they are covered, they may be more expensive than what they currently are. And that throughout the whole community that live in just on the margins will make a huge difference. 11 weeks ago, I fell and broke my wrist. I had to have major surgery with it. I went into the doctor knowing a comfort level that I was going to be covered and not be a burden to society for it. And also, I think that doctor looked and said, hey, I'm going to be paid something for my work with a patient. Whereas previously, I know going into the ER, I had a friend of mine that was also an ER doctor, and he told me for every person that comes in without insurance, it cost him about $35 a patient just for his insurance coverage.
We're speaking this morning here on KGNU with members of Colorado Citizens for Healthcare, which is a group that meets about every 2 to 3 weeks and have done since Trump was inaugurated as president. And their guiding principles are that they believe everyone in the country has a right to good healthcare, a right to good health insurance and the healthcare they need now and in the future. And they believe that a decent society is one where the wealthy care for those less well off. As we said, it's timely now because of what's happening in the Senate, where Republicans are negotiating some type of a deal, largely in secret, and so there's much concern about what the future could be. Talk about the senators in states, Richard DiIulio, where you think people can make a difference if they contact senators. You've identified 24 key senators. Are these senators that you feel could be swayed to vote against this? Republicans, talk about the 24 senators that you've identified.
They're a mixture. There's the 13 members of the Senate Working Group on Healthcare, this secret group of which, most importantly, we need to remind ourselves, Senator Gardner is one of those senators. He represents us and every one of the members, every one of the Colorado people, as well as the country. And then there's 11 other Senate Republicans that, through various means we have found, mostly through the media, who've either expressed concerns about the AHCA or are in states where Medicaid has been expanded, that will definitely impact them. So we've come up with kind of like 24 targets that should be contacted, realizing some will never change their mind. And Mitch McConnell will never change his mind, for example. But they need to hear from us as concerned citizens. That it really is our responsibility as citizens in this country. So, you know, we have their names, we have phone numbers that we can get to you if they want to contact me through my email address, but it's important that we call. It's time is imperative. It looks like they're going to be moving very quickly on this, perhaps right around or thereafter July 4th, before their August break. So our voices need to be heard.
And what response have you gotten when your group has contacted Senator Cory Gardner's office?
It's usually a phone answering machine. That's about all we kind of get. We have met with Senator Gardner's staff. I've met with them in Washington, D.C. But you find out very quickly that there's multiple layers and that you scratch the surface. You don't get to meet with the senior staff who make most of the decisions. But they have to hear. They have to hear from us. I guess if you want to be the hammer or the nail, you have to decide what you're going to do. And I think it's time to be active to be the hammer, otherwise we're going to be nailed.
Well, a lot of people are contacting senators, reaching out to elected officials who have never actually done it before and maybe don't know what to do. So if people are listening and they are concerned and they would like to contact Senator Cory Gardner's office, how might they do it? What's the most effective way? And what is your advice?
Well, as I said, I'll be glad to give the phone numbers out. I still think calling the Washington offices are most effective instead of the local offices, even though the messages may get passed along the same way. But hearing from each of us as citizens is important, and to make the point that this needs to be an open process. They need to not just change the House bill, but actually come up with something better. Just taking 80% of the House bill isn't going to be acceptable. And I think bottom line, people losing insurance is not acceptable for this country. Whether it be 23 million or 1 million, we have a responsibility to care for each of us.
Well, just as we wrap up in the last couple of minutes, as I said, Colorado Citizens for Healthcare formed since Donald Trump was inaugurated, and particularly in the light of what's happening with the repeal of the Affordable Care Act and the introduction of a Senate measure. Where can people find out more about what you do? Are you open to having other people join your meetings? And if people who are concerned about this issue, where might you direct them to?
I'd be more than happy for them to email me, and then I can send information individually to them about our planned meetings, some of our background if they want to hear about this. And like I said, I can be more than happy to share with them the 24 senators that they need to contact as soon as possible.
Well, we will put the email address for Dr. Richard DiIllo at kgnu.org, and we'll put some more information about Colorado Citizens for Healthcare at kgnu.org/a public affair as well. In the meantime, I'd like to thank all of my guests, all members of Colorado Citizens for Healthcare, Linda Peterson, Richard DiIllo, and Mike Homner. Thank you all very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.